Premier League football does not disappoint. Yet again, it's been a fantastic weekend of football.
Rodri goes at it again!
Newcastle and Manchester City play out an enthralling 3-3 draw. What is happening to Manchester United and Liverpool?
It's all about attitude.
Welcome to the Football Diary Podcast. Hey mates, the Football Diary Podcast here with yet another scintillating weekend of Premier League football. And I know it feels like we say that every week, but genuinely that's the case this week. It's been amazing. Starting off with probably the biggest game of the weekend. I know, Dave, you're probably going to have to hold your horses. It's not United-Liverpool, although that was absolutely a stunning game from our point of view. It's Newcastle-Man City, 3-3 in front of a packed St James's Park. It was a spectacle, wasn't it? Newcastle raced into a 3-1 lead, City pegging them back to a 3-all draw. What is it about Newcastle that made this game so watchable, Dave?
You think about this time last year, you know, where Newcastle were at then, it's, you know, night and day, Eddie Howe coming in as well.
Yeah.
It, you know, completely turned the club around, and, you know, they're so exciting to watch at the moment as well. The intensity that they have in their play, especially when they're at home, you know, with, you know, the crowd behind them, it really feels like they can get something, especially out of the bigger clubs, and which they have been doing, you know, over the last few months. And it's a game that you don't look forward to as an opposition fan, really, because you know it's going to be a tough game. I think in terms of where Newcastle were at, I think when City kind of did go ahead, you thought, yeah, oh no, you know, it seemed like we were kind of waiting for the floodgates to open when they scored that early goal, and you kind of thought that's what would happen. And Newcastle, all credit to them, they came back and they responded brilliantly. Managed to turn it around, and they scored a couple of really good goals. Almiron and Callum Wilson, great finish. And obviously it got to 3-1. Trippier came in and scored. That free kick was unbelievable. You know,
well, he scored 3 out of 4 direct free kicks now since he's been there, which is great.
It couldn't have been any more in the corner, really. You don't really see many free kicks like that anymore. You know,
James Ward-Prowse is probably the closest to that, but their technique for Trippier is quite unique, isn't it?
You know, you kind of go back to the days of David Beckham when, you know, was scoring goals, you know, things like that. How rare I think it is now to see them these days. You know, there's very few players with that sort of technique that can kind of get it up and over, and, you know, in that side. And what a signing he's been for them. I'm sure they'll be looking to get a few more in before the end of the window, but, you know, the City looked in trouble at that time, but, you know, they responded like we know they can, and managed to get them a couple of goals. And when they did, it only seemed like it was going to be a matter of time before they went on and got the winner, because they still had plenty of time. What was it? They had around 70-odd minutes when they scored the equaliser, was it?
I think that's just, like you say, a test of Newcastle's character, isn't it? The way they've played out the game. And I think when you look at the starting 11, half the team was still the team that Steve Bruce had as well. They've not made huge changes to the team, but the players they've brought in have added something. Nick Pope was great. I thought he was really, really solid goalkeeping display from him. He kept them in the game for large parts, didn't he? So many saves. Alan Saint-Maximin as well. He was such a threat on the counter down that left-hand side. Probably man of the match for me, I think, was Saint-Maximin. Despite all the crazy, amazing goals that have gone in, he really caused City problems, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. It's crazy to watch him in full flow, really. Like, in real time, you can't believe he could actually run that quickly with the ball. He just seems to be in fast forward when he's got the ball at his feet. And I did think he did play well, but I think he just has so much potential that it'd be a shame if he couldn't make that next step forward, because if he could start providing a bit more productivity, I feel like it'd be a matter of time before one of the top floor big six come in for him, or, you know, elsewhere in Europe, because he has so much ability. It'd be sad for him not to fulfil his potential.
Well, you're assuming that Newcastle won't be one of those big six anytime soon. They might be. I mean, on this evidence, do you think they've got a chance of fighting for that in the next couple of seasons?
I think it's too soon to say in the next couple of seasons. It depends on, you know, who they bring in. But, I mean, at the minute, you look at the league, it looks so strong. You know, every game is a difficult one. I can't see them making a climb in. It depends who they can get in. But I just don't feel like they've got that prestige as a club to sort of attract players. When PSG jumped onto the scene, it took them a bit of a while, really.
It's a statement of result, really, isn't it? 3-all against City, and they could have won the game. And I think the players they have signed up to now, Eddie Howe's credit to him and the scouting department for this, they've not been like megastar names, like you say, because I think they know they'd have to pay well over the odds in terms of wages to get those players to come to the club. As big as Newcastle are and as big as the club is and its reputation is pretty good, they're not a global name yet, are they still? So the kind of players like they've had, Nick Pope, household name, but not like a global megastar. Kieran Trippier, not at the top of his game, but certainly one of the best defenders in the country. And then Bruno Guimarães, who is on the up again, is one of those players that will probably get picked off by a bigger team at some point in the future. They're all quite smart signings. So I think for me, that's where Newcastle and Eddie Howe look like they've taken the right steps so far in the transfer market. Who knows, next summer, if you fast forward 12 months, might be a different story. They might be sort of fishing in a bigger pond, who knows. But looks encouraging up to now. But Man City, Dave, what did you make of their performance? They'll probably see this as 2 points lost, rightfully so, in the title race being so tight as it has been in recent years. But a good comeback nonetheless, especially to pull back from 3-1 down. And Haaland got on the score sheet again. So not a bad result, really, when you look at it that way.
Yeah, I mean, Guardiola will be looking at it as an opportunity missed, really. Especially in a position where 1-0 up. I think Foden was in a great position to roll the ball into the box. It would have been a tap-in and it would have been 2-0 up. And if they'd gone 2-0 up, I don't think there would have been any recovery there. Like, obviously, Guardiola's got such high standards. He looks at those sort of moments in games and realises that they can have such a big say in little moments like that. You know, it was quite interesting. Haaland, again, there were a few touches in there, but
yeah.
Like we've already spoken about over the last couple of weeks, he's not really dominating the games with the ball at his feet. You know, he's not having a great amount of touches, but when he is, he's having these moments and he's finding himself in these positions. He could have probably scored a couple of more goals. He obviously had a big one at the back post, which he sort of, I'd say it's a half chance because he was on the stretch and it wasn't really kind of a glaring miss as such, but no, it's looking promising. I don't think they'll be too worried at this point about dropping a couple of points so early on in the season.
It's interesting because City, despite drawing 3-3, at the end they came good through the quality of some of their top players. So De Bruyne's passing was fantastic again. The way he plays through balls is just on another planet, isn't it? I think for me, Bernardo Silva as well looks like the kind of player you wouldn't even dream of letting go. Barcelona can wave all the money they want in his direction. I can't see him going anywhere. He's just such a talented, dynamic little player, isn't he? But yeah, so much quality in the City squad. And other contenders for the top at the moment, Arsenal won again, 3-0 away at Bournemouth. Quite an easy win for them. But some more solid performances from a few of their players coming good. William Saliba had another good one. He's got his own chant now after three games of the Premier League season, which is bloody annoying. If you've not heard it, look it up. And also Tottenham 1-0 against Wolves. Harry Kane scoring his 250th goal for the club. And he's overtaken, I think, Sergio Aguero in the all-time Premier League goal scoring rankings. So they're both contenders for the top of the table at the moment. Weirdly, down at the bottom and mid-table, we go to our next game, which is Liverpool Man United at Old Trafford. Now, United leapfrog Liverpool by winning 2-1, going into 14th position, which again sounds surreal on its own. But the way we've seen United play at the start of this season after the first two games, a lot of people were predicting an absolute drubbing here, weren't they, Dave? But they changed it up massively. Erik ten Hag changed the system completely to accommodate this Liverpool side. Out of the window went a lot of the rules he was trying to implement from the last two games. And it worked. Liverpool struggled to do anything against United. What did he do differently, Dave? What was the Ten Hag system that worked so well this time around?
I don't know whether he changed a great deal of things from the Brentford game. I hear that there were instructions ignored in the Brentford game, weren't executed plan. I know, obviously, Liverpool had a lot more of the ball in this game than what, obviously, Brentford did against United. I think it was 70% possession. United 20 more kilometres more in this game than they did in the Brentford game, which I think speaks volume as well. The desire to win the ball back.
Yeah.
You saw that obviously there was a plan there to play long from goal kicks. We weren't playing out from the back just to kind of beat that press from Liverpool's forwards, and that worked really well for us as soon as the ball was obviously went upfield into Liverpool's sort of defence. You know, there were challenges being made half a second quicker than Liverpool's.
How much of that is Ten Hag's influence, though? Because, I mean, he looked visibly angry after the Brentford game, and rightly so. Do you think the players, it's as simple as they've just had a rocket up their backside in training, is like, that's not good enough. If you don't do more, you'll be out of this squad, because they look like different players. The attitude and the mentality, like you said, was just like night and day.
He's made, obviously made a couple of changes in this game. I know, you know, Maguire's had a lot of negative press over, let's say, the last few months, maybe the last year. Some of it warranted, some of it, you know, a bit harsh. But and obviously Ronaldo, Ten Hag's shown that he's not scared to drop the big names and make decisions that are required. Obviously, he also dropped Luke Shaw. And Tyrone Malacia came in. I think one thing that stood out to me in this game is that there wasn't a player in that team that had below a 7 out of 10 for me. I feel as though everyone performed, you know, really well. A few individuals performing, you know, magnificently. There wasn't dawdling on the ball, as we saw with the first goal. It all started with, you know, with the ball coming to Martinez. He played first time pass, you know, in half a second. It's quite a simple ball, but he played it to the left hand side to Elanga, and that started the first move. And we've seen, you know, in the past when we've had the likes of Maguire and Lindelof, they just take too long on the ball, and it seems to allows obviously the opposition back into their structure and shape. And you know, Ten Hag, obviously, he's all about quick play, fast thinking football. It seems as though we saw quite a bit of it, you know, in this game. And that was really encouraging to see, is that despite the two results in the first couple of games, you know, more so the Brighton game was absolutely terrible. I'd say there were more shades of in the Brentford game of what we were trying to achieve. Obviously, it's going to take time. And there's going to be blip bumps along the road, and we're going to have to go through that together as fans. But as long as there is, you know, some sort of progression and thinking towards what we want to achieve, I'm sure fans will be, you know, patient enough to see it, through. And, you know, they've clearly got the manager's back. So,
yeah, if ever a club needed a result like this, it was United right now, wasn't it? I mean, the defensive shape was like quite clear to see when Liverpool ever had the ball, which was most of the time. The defence and the formation of the back four was so rigid and so disciplined, and they didn't let anything past them. The amount of blocks that they made, chasing down balls, like you said, just more running generally, and making use of the ball when they had it. Their counter-attacking was like the best of the Solskjaer era sometimes, wasn't it? And I think there was almost an acknowledgement from Ten Hag that the pressing style and playing out from the back was too risky with the players he's got. And it was almost suicidal, wasn't it, against Brentford, the way we sort of tried to do that. So playing it slightly longer and more direct and with a quick turn of pace. And once we got possession, we were straight away going towards Liverpool's goal, weren't we? That worked brilliantly. And we've got the players to kind of execute that at the minute. Sancho seemed to benefit from that. Marcus Rashford, when he started the game at centre forward, seemed to sort of thrive off that, even though his position changed slightly in the second half. But it was, yeah, just a lot of players raising their game. Marcus Rashford needed that goal as well. So the confidence he'll get from that will be really interesting to see. But the statement he's made by leaving Cristiano on the bench and leaving Maguire, the captain, on the bench, can't really be overstated. I mean, he will probably say, and I think he did afterwards, that it was just the way he needed to play for this particular game. I can't really see them getting back into the team anytime soon, can you? And also Luke Shaw as well, on the back of Tyrone Malacia's performance. Looks like he's got a fight on his hands to get back into contention again.
You know, that partnership, especially at centre-back, it looked, you know, it was night and day from what we've seen in the past. They seem to complement each other really well, Varane and Martinez. And one thing that Varane's got that Maguire hasn't is obviously that recovery pace, where he can get back if he needs to. And, you know, another defender's caught out of position. And I just thought that was, you know, great to see. And unfortunately, we couldn't get the clean sheet. I was at around 78, 79 minutes. I was like, surely it can't be this like straightforward. You know, it's never this easy. Never. And, you know, of course, they went and scored that goal in the 81st minute or whatever it was. And it was a squeaky bum time. Yeah, there's plenty of reasons to be encouraged from what we saw last night. I didn't expect that consistency throughout the team. That's the best I've seen as players a unit for a long, long time.
Yeah, a lot of positives. And I think we're both quite realistic as United fans to not get too carried away, because your next game at Southampton could be a completely different story, couldn't it? Before I sort of press you on Casemiro, first of all, the Glazers, the protests, just a word on Liverpool, because they're now below United in the table, which is, you know, was difficult to fathom at the start of the season, especially being as low as they are. They haven't won a game yet. What's going on at Liverpool? Because, I mean, two of their star players, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Virgil van Dijk, both had such a difficult game, didn't they? And not just a difficult game, they've had a difficult start to the season overall. Miles actually said on the pod a couple of times, Trent can't defend. That proved right again, I think. The midfield's not good enough. That again proved right. They left it really late to bring on Fabinho, and I don't know why they do that. So yeah, a few question marks at Liverpool. And Jurgen Klopp also, in his reaction in the post-match interview, saying that he thought they did enough to deserve to win the game. So I don't know what planet he was on, but it's a strange comment to make when everybody saw a completely different game, didn't they? What's going on there, mate? How can they turn their season around? And is it game over for the title for them already?
Firstly, on Klopp, I think it's another one of them situations where he's protecting his players, isn't he? We saw Fergie do it throughout his tenure at United.
Yeah.
Make a comment on the game, and it was obvious for everyone to see that that wasn't the case. So, the one thing that stood out for me is they were physically bullied. United bullied them, and United aren't the most physical team, particularly Martinez. He kind of made his stamp on the game, and from minute one, really, obviously barged into Salah, didn't he? And obviously conceded that free kick, but it kind of showed that they weren't going to give Liverpool, you know, any sort of room to breathe, and that was the case throughout the whole game. I think we were all just kind of waiting for Liverpool to respond. There was a little bit of a sort of look like they were turning things up a notch towards the end of the first half. Fernandes tried to scream it in his own top corner, and it hit Martinez on the line. Somehow didn't go in. And that was a bit nervy towards the end of the first half. But again, as soon as the second half began, United were on top again. And strange, really, because we're used to seeing Liverpool fly out of the traps. And for one reason or another, that's not happening. They're starting slowly. And it was mentioned in, you know, post-match by both, you know,
Robertson came out,
didn't he, and said, you know, they've started slowly in all of their matches, but they can't really quite put their finger on it.
All of the games so far, they've kind of, like you said, been bullied. Fulham bullied them, you know, Palace bullied them. It was a tough watch sometimes, wasn't it? But United, we didn't expect them to bully them on this scale, but they let them. And it was a derby game. It's the biggest game of both these team seasons normally. And they shouldn't have just let United bring the intensity like that, but they did, and they brought none of their own.
Yeah, the worry is they're vulnerable at the back, and that's clear to see. We saw moments in the last couple of games, especially Fulham. Fulham could have been outside in that game.
But United obviously announced Casemiro in the game with Liverpool. He's a bit of a signing that didn't really look like it was on the cards for a while. It's quite a late swoop for him. What do you make of that as a signing for United? Because there's been some criticism of his age for a start. Graham Souness, we won't even go to him and his comments on him, because he just needs to shut up and go away. But also the protests that were happening against the Glazers as well, outside Old Trafford. There was a big turnout for those as well. Where are United as a club now after signing a player like Casemiro, yet also those kind of movements are happening still outside? Clearly, the fans aren't stupid. They don't look at this signing and think, you know, yes, problem fixed. We've got a defensive midfielder, one of the best in the world at doing it. They know the root cause is still the owners, right?
Yeah, and, you know, what boggles the mind really is we were, you know, scrambling around in the bargain bucket, it seems, you know, linked with the likes of Arnautovic, Rabiot. Obviously, clear for everyone to see that the money's been there all along.
And not finished yet by the looks of it either.
No, they seemed unwilling to spend it. They were linked with Anthony Gakpo from PSV. I think we want another keeper, potentially a right back as well. So that's probably going to be another 150 million. There's obviously been no planning. It almost seems like all of the speculation, Jim Ratcliffe coming out and saying, you know, I'm interested in buying Man United, seems like it spurred it in the club into action. That spurred a huge reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Not just all over social media, all over the world. You know, Glazers out was trending number one worldwide, about 400,000 tweets, I think, on one day, which is ridiculous in itself.
Which is encouraging to see, I think, because the fans aren't staying quiet. And like you say, we're not naive enough to think, yes, we've got Casemiro now, everything's happy, everything's sorted. And I think United fans have been guilty of being complacent in the past when we've made these marquee signings. But the fact that we've gone from, like you say, Frenkie de Jong to Adrian Rabiot to then land on Casemiro is such a sign of how scattergun our approach has been. And I'm sure Erik ten Hag will say that Casemiro is the player that was on his radar for a long time, and he probably was. But yeah, I think the way we operate it publicly, at least, is just a joke, isn't it? But on Casemiro, actually, can you just kind of talk about your feelings about what he will add to United? And are you pleased with the signing? What's your thoughts with his arrival?
Oh, yeah, he's definitely, you know, he's going to provide us with that screen that we need in front of defence. He's going to be the glue there, I think, that's kind of going to prevent us being got at as much. I think Ten Hag described him as the cement between the stones, which I fully agree with. Like you mentioned there, I don't think we've been chasing Casemiro all summer. There's been an opportunity there. Potentially his agents come out and spoke to United and said he's available, you know, and clubs haven't known that he's available. United have jumped in there at the opportunity and said, yeah, you know, we're interested, because it seems like Frenkie de Jong is not going to come. Very good signing. Let's be honest, you know, it'd be nice if he was a couple of years younger than what he is now. Let's not act like 30s, you know, he's at the end of his career. I think he's still got a good 3 or 4 years yet to offer it.
I think it's like we've talked about Lisandro Martinez and Tyrell Malacia. The thing that they've bought, and I think the thing that Ten Hag sees, is just that determination, desire, that gratefulness to be at Manchester United, and that effort and application will come from Casemiro from day one. He's such a grafter, he's such a fighter. He's a bit of a nasty piece of work sometimes, which I think we need in midfield, you know, but not to the McTominay extent where he's nasty for the sake of being nasty and picking up cards. He's super effective and he disrupts the flow of teams. And I think in the Champions League final, he was literally everywhere. It felt like he got on the end of any oncoming through balls that were coming from Liverpool in that whole game and just laying it off to Kroos and Modric, wasn't he? So he brings a calm and experience that I think we've never had in midfield since probably Michael Carrick was there. You know, he's probably the best, most technically gifted player that's going to play in the middle of the park since Carrick's days, which says a lot about the players we've had there, really, because we've had so many failures. Very quickly, what's your expectation for and hope for United now then? What would be success this season?
I'll just be happy if we just show some, you know, progression in our play style, you know, how effective we are in Ten Hag's system. I just want to see some good football played, and I'll be happy with a top six finish, and if we can go far in the Europa League, then that'll be good enough for me, because I just feel as though there's still probably a couple of transfer windows away from where we want to be as a team. I know Ten Hag's a great coach, and I'm sure he will improve many of these players and get them playing the way he wants to. But we've seen it, you know, with other teams, the likes of Pep Guardiola and his team, he's had players in when he first came to Man City, realised they weren't quite, you know, what he needed in those positions. They weren't up to it. Right. Obviously, he got rid and brought new players in. So I think there will be a similar sort of transitional period for us.
Yeah. Just evolution you want to see, isn't it? And competition again, and it's not disgracing ourselves against bigger teams. So this is a start. The Liverpool game seems like a start. Yeah, interesting one to kind of think about, whether Liverpool can actually turn it around or whether they're in a relegation scrap after all with the likes of Aston Villa, by the looks of it as well. They lost 3-1 to Crystal Palace, which is insane. There's a few teams down there that are looking shaky. Everton drew 1-0 to Nottingham Forest. Frank Lampard's first point of the season there. Fulham beat Brentford 3-2 to continue their impressive start as well. So even the relegation zone is looking a bit different to what we predicted at the start. Out of the teams that you've seen so far, Dave, who's looking the most likely to slide into that bottom three?
It's a hard one, isn't it?
It is.
Everton are a mess at the minute. You know, they've obviously played Forest, played at a drab draw there, and
yeah,
I mean, a club like Forest coming up, especially with so many new players in their team, they should really be, you know, beating teams like that. And no disrespect to Forest coming up, but you know, it's worrying times for them. I think they're going to be well down, right down there again, because there's so many good teams. You look at the teams that were down there last year, the likes of Leeds, they've improved massively all of a sudden. And if these smaller, if these, you know, teams, relegation candidates are picking up points early doors, it's going to be a lot more difficult for the slow starters at the start of the season, the likes of Liverpool and yeah, I joke, but it's going to be difficult. Tight last year with relegation, barring obviously, you know, Norwich and
I don't think Bournemouth look good enough so far. I think that's been quite clear. They've been looking at Man City and Arsenal in their opening games. I think Southampton have played better than even Hasenhüttl expected. They beat a pretty poor Leicester team 2-1 at the King Power Stadium, coming from behind as well. So they've shown some resilience so far this season. So there's a few teams that I expected to struggle and they're doing better than I thought. West Ham's one where I didn't really expect them to be bottom of the table at this stage. They've lost all three so far. What do you think that's down to? Because they've not even started playing like Gianluca Scamacchia. He's not quite ready. But they don't look strong at all. They don't look as resilient as they were in previous seasons. What's going on there?
I don't know if their transfer window's gone according to plan. I don't think they've got the players in quick enough that they probably want to have done. Whether that's down to not getting the deals over the line, you know, players not struggling to attract players into the team. And the worrying thing about that is, you know, you've got a good kind of solid base of really good players there, the likes of obviously Declan Rice and, you know, Jarrod Bowen, who will really be looking to kick on this season, not just individually, but, you know, collectively as a team, with how well they've done those last couple of years. And it'd be probably quite worrying for West Ham, because those players, if they're not kind of getting what they want, you know, collectively as a team and succeeding, achieving as a team, then they will probably look elsewhere, and, you know, rightfully so, if that's the case. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, you know, they've had a couple of really difficult couple of first two games that obviously they came into the season with. Not get too hasty and write them off yet. But I mean, it's not looking good. They need to turn things around quickly. So let's hope that, you know, we see a bit of a revival. Maybe I'm sure they're looking to bring probably two or three more players in towards this, you know, this last week. Yeah. It seems like so many clubs are leaving it really late, though, doesn't it?
Definitely. Well, I think one team on the flip side of the West Ham result, they lost 2-0 to Brighton. Just a word on Brighton, actually. They started fantastically well. I think Graham Potter's one of the managers, really, that's in the highest ascendancy at the minute for his reputation. He's doing brilliantly there. What do you attribute to Brighton's good form so far this season, mate?
I think standout player for them has been Moise Caicedo in midfield. I think he's been, you know, brilliant. And particularly in this game, we bossed that midfield.
Yeah.
So let's not forget holds Declan Rice in West Ham's midfield. At such a young age, that's so impressive. And I think I read a stat a couple of days ago that in their last 10 games, last 14, I think they've won about 10, 9 or 10 of their last 14.
I think they're one of the form teams of the last few games. Yeah, you're right.
He started in. Before that, they were on a really dire run. Let's not forget, he was in their team. He joined, was it last January? Came in, because I remember United were linked with him as well. He was earmarked as, you know, big prodigy. And I think they snapped up for, was it 5 million? £5 million.
They've got another team of players that always seem to put in at least a 7 out of 10 every single game, don't they? I mean, against West Ham, there was quite a few you could have picked. Welbeck's having a season already, isn't he? McAllister played well. Trossard played well. You know, there's a few players that are stepping up, and we talked about the lack of an out-and-out goal scorer for them. But goals are actually coming from other sources now. So Graham Potter's a brilliant coach. I love him.
I think that is something that we're struggling with. Like, obviously, we saw it plenty last season. They played so well in games and they just couldn't take their chances. But it almost seems like a lot of the players are developing that killer instinct. We're seeing goals being scored from other players now. Obviously, they lost Bissouma as well. That was a big loss for them. They've not missed him at all so far. Obviously, you know, impressive itself in itself. But we're all kind of a bit curious to see what they can achieve this year because they've had such a good start to the season.
Yeah. As long as they don't get their best players picked off like these teams often do once they stabilise themselves in the top half of the table. But yeah, they look decent, don't they? The next talking point is probably the surprise package of all the teams so far, and that's Leeds. They find themselves in third place in the Premier League table now after an amazing 3-0 win against Chelsea. And this is a Chelsea team who kind of did shoot themselves in the foot quite a lot with some difficult attempts at Cruyff turns in their own box from Edouard Mendy. So that didn't help. But they were great value for their 3-0 win, weren't they? They didn't look at all lucky to win 3-0. And every game they've played this season, I don't know about you, but I've seen genuine improvement from them. And for all the fans who were like mourning Bielsa leaving the club, this team looks better, dare I say. Looks more exciting, and it's definitely been a good watch so far to see Leeds play, hasn't it?
Again, there was some post-match comments from Tuchel who said they were clearly the best team. Which I struggled to see how that was the case. I mean, there were a few promising moments where Chelsea did have, you know, it looked like they were going to carve a couple of opportunities out. You know, they were stale, you know, especially in the second half when you just thought, you know, there's got to be some sort of reaction. You were kind of waiting for it. And it just never came. Leeds were first through every ball. You know, every 50-50, they were coming out the ball. I mean, this is a team that I earmarked as one that I thought might go down. This season might be one of the relegation candidates, and I know it's still early, but you know I'm looking like I'm far off the mark with that prediction. And you've got to give a lot of credit to the manager because there was a lot of doubters when he came into this. Yeah. Let's be honest, they've been really impressive, and you know, yeah, at the beginning of the season, the signings that made in Adams, Aronson, they've been, you know, so good in the centre of the park. You barely notice that, you know, Calvin Phillips isn't there anymore.
I think the way he plays Jesse Marsh, the way he wants his teams to play, I think he hinted at the end of last season that it wasn't going to happen straight away because they were fighting a relegation dogfight, weren't they? And he's had a full pre-season now to kind of condition his players to his way of playing, and they've bought in 100%. And I'm the same as you. I think there's a lot of snobbery towards him because he's an American coach, first of all, and he had the mick taken out of him quite a lot. Just for being American, which was harsh. And then he brought in the likes of Tyler Adams and Brendan Aaronson, also fellow Americans. Brendan Aaronson from the Red Bull stable of clubs as well, like him. So it did look kind of a bit in-house, didn't it? So he had to hit the ground running, Aaronson, to make his mark, and he has. And I think he's been one of their best players so far and probably one of the best signings of the summer. I know it's early days, but he looks brilliant.
Yeah, he's been really impressive, I think. One thing, really, you know, when players kind of make the jump from those sort of leagues, you just wonder and worry for them, really, and how they're kind of going to adapt to, you know, the Premier League, because it's, you know, there's a big difference in the pace of it, competitiveness. So he looks like he's been here for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But he's kind of started, and you know, he looks a really talented player. Let's not forget, he's obviously still young as well. So I think he's going to be a key player for them this year. He provides so much energy in that midfield. Chelsea really struggled with him. And Adams as well. Now, how often is it we say they get dominated in midfield? They, you know, Leeds were kind of cutting through them at times. Not just cutting through them, but they were, you know, holding onto the ball, keeping possession. And that was really impressive to see as well. But yeah, obviously Chelsea didn't help themselves with the first two goals.
No. Well, I do think Chelsea didn't really help themselves by the midfielders they picked to begin with as well. I thought it wasn't their strongest midfield. It definitely wasn't a midfield that was going to compete with Leeds' midfield at all. Jorginho, Mount, Gallagher looked a bit soft as well. You know, where's Kante? He would have been a much better option. Where's Kovacic? Was even available? But they're the players that I think they needed to add some steel to their midfield. Not only that, but you could see how cruelly exposed their defenders were for pace. Like Koulibaly's had a great start, but he got sent off and kept a miserable display for him.
They're playing with Loftus-Cheek at fullback.
Yeah, it's been crazy. It shows you how much they need the likes of Wesley Fofana, whose recovery pace is really good. And he looks like tailor-made for that system, really, and for that team. So watch this space for that. I think that will be the signing that makes them look a bit more stable at the back. Because this game especially, they looked exposed, didn't they, against Leeds? To wrap up, Dave, if you can, obviously a lot of teams bloodying noses today. A lot of teams that were meant to be at the top of the league languishing in the middle and bottom half of the league as well. So it's been a game week of surprises, it's fair to say. But who would you say is your hero of the week this time around?
I've gone for Brendan Aaronson, just because I was just so surprised. And I've not seen a great deal of Leeds in the first couple of games. We want to see these young players come in and perform, and he's doing that so far. And I was pleasantly surprised at how well he did play.
On the flip side, then, who is that a mare this week? Who's your villain of the week?
This is a difficult one. Three or four players.
Go on then, pick your worst three, and then pick the ultimate villain of the week out of those.
Edouard Mendy, Koulibaly, and Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Ooh, to pick out of those three is difficult. Wow. I think the biggest impact on a team's performance negatively, you can't look much further than Mendy, because that was the worst start for Chelsea possible. But, I mean, you're the decision-maker this week, Dave. Who are you going for?
Yeah, I think we'll go with Mendy. Yeah, I don't know what he was thinking, really. It's just, I know they're trying to play out from the back, but you've just got to, you know, get rid of those situations. I just, big moment.
And then finally, just your goal of the week. A few wicked goals to choose from as well, but who have you settled on as the best?
I'm going to choose Jadon Sancho, because I just thought the way that the goal was worked, let's be honest, we're not seeing many great team goals over the last couple of years from United. Plenty of individual goals, but we're relying on individual brilliance for the last couple of years. But I've just thought the way that the goal was, you know, worked, Sancho, the amount of composure that he had in that moment, just literally place it into the corner, you know, showed a lot of steel, really, to literally just stroke it into the bottom corner like he did. And I've got a lot of hopes for Sancho this year. I'm just hoping that this can be the season now that he shows how talented he is. And I feel like Ten Hag can unlock that. So fingers crossed.
And a word from that goal as well. Just Virgil van Dijk, what was he doing? Yeah. Standing off him loads with his arms behind his back, giving him all the time in the world to square up the shot. But yeah, it was still a quality goal. But
he could have been in the villain of the week as well.
Anyway, that's it for now. Thank you for joining me this week, Dave. Miles has been off in Rome this week to watch his beloved AS Roma play at the Stadio Olimpico. So I'm sure he'll have all of that to tell us about when he does return. But thanks for watching. Please do hit like, hit subscribe and hit follow if you can, just to keep our numbers up and get us growing. That'd be amazing. Dave, thank you, mate. See you soon.
See you next time.
Take it easy.